Thanks for tuning in for Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. Coming up later, Thane Maynard talks to Brian Jorg, the head horticulturalist at the Cincinnati Zoo, about the importance of wetlands in our ecosystem. Once thought disease-ridden and useless land, wetlands play a very important role. You'll learn about that. And we'll hear about the lost bicyclist, the first man to try to bicycle around the world, and the story of his disappearance, all ahead on Cincinnati Edition. David Wecker spent 20-some years as a columnist at the Cincinnati Post. The stories he shared about the people and places in our community were wide-ranging, sometimes funny, sometimes poignant. And he's put together a collection of those columns in his new book, Square Pegs, Stories About Everything and Nothing. Do you have a favorite David Wecker column or story you remember, or an encounter with him along the way? Share your stories by calling 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. David Wecker, glad to have you on Cincinnati Edition.
Thanks for having me. I forgot how good you are. You're really good at this.
Well, full disclosure, I consider David a good friend and a colleague. We spent plenty of time working together on a program called Brain Brew with Doug Hall and Bruce Ellis. So we spent plenty of time together. So please pardon the familiarity as we go along. So Square Peg, Stories About Everything and Nothing. Is this proof that there is life after the newspaper business?
You know, I've always been one to, when I left the Post, I'm not bitter. I had 20-some great golden years. So it was a great bunch of people to work with. And then when it was time to go, it's like, okay, what's next? So I'm not too good at looking back. This book might bespeak to the contrary, but I did want to, I thought, well, let's do this. And it was just a joy having that job while I had it, but yes, there is life after that.
Well, and life in the newspaper business has changed drastically since you've left as well.
Yeah, and I don't mean to get kind of dark here, but I feel that there's in print journalism, at least to a large degree, I feel has abdicated its responsibility, or abrogated its responsibility. We have more interest now in the Kim Kardashians of the world than what's going on with Benghazi and what Lois Lerner might have been thinking at the IRS.
Well, and that comes back around to your column, which I always loved, because a lot of times at the Cincinnati Post you were writing about news, but most of the time you were sharing stories of some unique characters in our community, some people that really stand out. And I can imagine that when you went back to gather things together for Square Pegs, that it must have been interesting to go and revisit some of these characters.
It was a ton of fun. Throughout my career, at least with the Post, I clipped everything and sent it to my parents because, you know, so they can read it. And they saved them. And the several large boxes were filled with these things. I probably got about a tenth of them in this book. But going through them was, a trip down that lane that we know as memory.
Speaking to David Wecker, former columnist with the Cincinnati Post, if you have a question or comment for David, you can give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. Talking about David's new book, Square Peg, Stories About Everything and Nothing. And I bet as much fun as it was picking out the stories, it must have been fun to arrange them, too, because you've broken them into several categories throughout the book.
I hope that works. I don't know.
No, it did. You know, sometimes I thought it was a stretch, but most of the time they were a dead fit.
Much of my life is a stretch, so that's not inappropriate. I think one of them was Encounters with Nature. It's a heading. And as I recall, one of the stories in there was about an aging male go-go dancer who had a couple of anacondas or boa constrictors.
Yes.
And one night fell on them, and then they basically constricted him. He nearly died. And I put that in the brushes, encounters with nature piece. Well, snakes are nature.
Yeah, no, I think you made the comment that while he had been known for his act with two anacondas, there was only one the next night. It's recall because.
But, I don't know what happened to the boa or anaconda, something like that. Yeah.
So who out of all these stories, because they're wonderful in their succinctness at times. You know, it gets to the Thank point you. In a hurry, but the characters are very deeply illustrated. What of the stories sticks out? I mean, you know, you talk about what is he, 76? No, 80-something? I couldn't remember how old the stripper was. But
No, he was in his late 50s. So
oh, yes.
He was many years older than you.
So thank you. Any stories that, you know, you can snatch right off the top of your head beyond that elderly stripper?
Yeah, there are two. When I get this question, there are two. And one is you may remember he was Raymond Thundercloud, Thundersky. Raymond Thundersky, who was a guy you'd see as a Cincinnati street character. You would see him in a clown costume with a ruffled Victorian collar and a hard hat and a toolbox. And you would always see him at construction sites. And what was he doing? Well, no one knew. And whenever I would approach him, because he was a natural for me to want to write about, I'd say, "Hi, I'm David Wecker, and I'd like to," and then he'd pack up his stuff and run away. Well, one day I saw him on the cover of, it was a cover of one of the Resident Homes newsletters. And he was dressed in one of the polka-dotted suits, hammering on a Habitat for Humanity house. And he just looked like the happiest guy ever. And I said, "That's the guy." So I called them, and they put me in a touch with his guardian. Turns out he was a full-blooded Mohawk Indian, Native American. And through his guardian, Larry Higdon, who's also just a very elegant Native American fellow here, businessman in town, very successful, put me in touch, and I finally got to meet Raymond. And Raymond was drawing little pencil drawings of these construction sites, but with his own twist to them. And he became, not because I wrote about him, but I was the first guy to write about him, he became somewhat of a celebrated artist and had shows in New York and Los Angeles.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. And so that was a joy. I wrote several times about Raymond and did his obituary finally.
Yeah, Raymond Thundersky, great artist and left a lasting legacy. And I love how the story is non-judgmental about, you explain, he just enjoys the clown costumes and, what he's wearing, and that he was happy with life, very happy with life.
Yeah, he was. He got into clowns. All the clowns on the circuit actually knew him. He went up to, Cincinnati Gardens, mm-hmm. when he was much younger, made friends with the clowns there. And they started providing him with these actually very nice clown outfits, and he took to these as this would be his normal everyday attire. It was his look, mm-hmm. just like jeans and a t-shirt are our look.
Yes, indeed. I'm talking with David Wecker, the author of Square Peg, Stories About Everything and Nothing, some columns collected from his years at the Cincinnati Post as a columnist. If you remember a favorite story that you read of David's or had an encounter with him along the way, give us a call at 513-419-7155 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. Okay, Raymond Thundersky, that was one.
Okay.
You said two of them. What was the other one that
there was
popped
a guy, there was a guy on the west side, and his name, actually he asked me not to use his name. He's gone now, but he was a World War II veteran of Guadalcanal, a Marine. And it was 50 years after the fact. And he was taking stock account of his life. And he realized that he had the skull of a Japanese soldier in his basement. And he wanted to somehow return it. And the way this happened was, in Guadalcanal, he and six or seven other guys shared a tent. And they came upon I don't know how they got the skull, but it was war, and war is hell. So, mm-hmm. And they is a morale thing, morale kind of thing. They put it on a stake outside their tent. This is a West Side guy. And he came to me and he said, I need your help. Well, if you have, I'd like to get this skull. It needs to go back to Japan because, you know, they revere their dead just as we do. And I've changed my ideas about a few things. And if you had to do that, who else would you go to but Dave Wecker, you know, to make this happen?
Right.
Well, this was in the days before, what is it that they can test now? Not cholesterol.
DNA?
Yeah, thanks. That's the thing.
They can test cholesterol, too, these days, Dave.
Yeah, they tested mine. I better get it tested again, especially the ones to my brain. And so I called every embassy, every kind of Japanese envoy office I could find, and they all said thank you, but no thank you. We have no way of knowing if these indeed are the remains of a Japanese soldier. Well, I wrote that story, and the guy came, gave me the skull in a Kroger bag.
Oh, no.
And I put it in the trunk of my Toyota.
Yeah, okay.
And
imagine if you get stopped. Yes.
Well, it had their, they'd autographed it. So I wrote that story. Then I hear from an attorney in Union, Kentucky, who says, it just so happens I have a business venture in the Solomon Islands where Guadalcanal is. We have a lottery there, and we're also salvaging the wrecks of Japanese fighter planes that are still being found to this day in the mountains. And collectors will pay a lot of money, and so it was worth it for him to do that. And of course, in these planes, there are the remains of Japanese soldiers. So he said, if you'd like, I'm going there in about a month. If you'd like, I'll take that skull, and we'll put it in a plane and bring it down. And every year, a team of Shinto priests comes from Japan and takes whatever remains have been collected during the previous year, and they have a ceremony on the beach. Take the ashes back to Japan and bury them in their equivalent of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. So he did that for me, and I don't suppose it was the most honest way to get the – but he stashed the skull in a plane that they'd found on a mountaintop, took photographs, certified that it was what at least by all appearances –
Japanese.
To whatever extent they could, that – And so the skull back, at least the ashes of the skull, got back to where this West Side guy wanted them, and I think he died at least content on that front.
Making amends.
Yeah.
Well, many stories like that in Square Pegs, and I, you know, never knew when starting a story whether it would be one I laughed at or one I cried at. And as a writer, when you were approaching these stories, you know, how did you decide which way the story was going to go? Because with so many of these people, I mean, you could as easily cry about them as you could laugh in some cases.
Yeah, my emotions are pretty close to the surface, and I'm not a steely kind of guy. And I really didn't decide which way it would go. The story would decide itself, I think. I know that sounds kind of ephemeral, but one thing I would like to mention in those regards, there are a lot of times I'm sitting there writing this and I'm tearing up, you know. Another signal is you get the tingly on the back of the neck, the tingly feeling that, hey, this isn't bad. But it's not because of me. It's like something's working through me, you know. But the amazing thing to me in all the kind of the sadder ones or where someone had a need, I never had to ask or never once had to say, hey, this person has a need, because the story made it obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But I never had to do, quote unquote, the ask. And it never failed. Invariably, people would send money to, you know, with checks made out in my name to, you know, for up to $500 a couple times to build somebody a wheelchair ramp or get somebody groceries or whatever. And it was just amazing. I think that's something that was, you know, that goes along with this part of the country. You know, people want to help. All you had to do is let people know there was a need and people would help.
Speaking with David Wecker, the author of Square Peg, Stories About Everything and Nothing, available where books are sold. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org, or talk to David by calling 513-419-7100 or email us talk at wvxu.org. Mickey in Walnut Hills wanted to know if you knew what happened to former dance critic Jerry Stein, who worked for the Cincinnati Post for a while.
Oh, Jerry, yeah, I worked for a long time. Jerry was a gentle soul, and I don't know what happened to him. I will find out and let you know, though.
And is this, as you went back and relived your newspaper career, was there anything you found surprising when you went back to these columns, or do you remember them all?
No, I'm often surprised, and I'm even now still people say, hey, you wrote about my uncle. Who in the last time it happened, the uncle was Sammy Wright, who ran Cinema X in Newport.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you remember? And she was like, she couldn't have been nicer. I mean, it's hard to write about a guy like that running a kind of X-rated movie house as in a positive way. And I didn't really. I just laid it out. But she was just so grateful that, you know, to see that.
Well, and what has been the reaction since Square Pegs has been out? I mean, are you hearing from family and folks who were part of these stories?
Some.
Yes.
I'm not really beat the drum much on it, but...
Well, I mean, I can imagine because of your long career that some of these folks, well, Raymond Thundersky, for one, yeah. have made the trip over. And that's, you know, yeah. That's something you don't. But I can imagine that people remember stories
when,
like that.
When people see it, they grab it. Yeah. And especially, but a lot, you'll see a lot of these pieces were picked up from Associated Press items that were just like a paragraph. Like a guy lost his thumb in a boating accident in Montana on the Flaming Gorge Reservoir. And 6 months later, someone catches a fish. And the thumb's in there. So the guy's reunited with his thumb. But there was just a couple graphs in the Associated Press. And then I call them and turn it into a much longer thing.
That was a good story, too,
yeah.
Because it took a little bit to do it.
Yeah.
And amazing what a small world and a big fish can do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, 90 miles long and millions of these fish. Another was the Sucker Day thing. FBAM. Morrison, I think his name, F-Band. Well, anyway, a guy comes into town, loud sports coat, and says, there's a circus coming, y'all better get ready. Got him to fork up a bunch of money, and the circus never showed. And, but yet they celebrate in this town every August. They call it Sucker Day, you know. So
out of Square Pegs, what did you, what story surprised you the most and remember? What story that you had forgotten about? Did you go, oh my gosh, I forgot about that?
Yeah, I guess one of them, there were a lot because you know my memory's a sieve.
Yes. I do know that,
yeah.
David. Yeah,
yeah. You really do.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was a bad poke.
Yeah, no, it's fair. Totally fair. Snap. I would say there was one about the Isonettes. It was a fella, and his last name is Ison, lived in Campbell County, had seven daughters, and it was just the sweetest story. Tiny house, one bathroom.
Seven daughters, one bathroom.
Yeah, and so he quite often would have to, in the morning, he'd get in his car and drive to the gas station down the road so that he could avail himself of the facilities.
That was a good story, too.
Yeah, they're fun. I mean, it is fun. I think stories are the way, that's how we connect. You know, I was so fortunate.
Well, speaking of stories, David from Amelia wants to know if you know of John Coyne, who used to drive a tank into Batavia as a protest.
Yeah, I visited him once, and he had a 50-caliber machine gun set up in the woods on the back of a Jeep, and the target was an old Newtown police cruiser. And he let me shoot that thing, and with every shot, every round, the whole Jeep bucked. And finally, the cruiser caught on fire. But yeah, that guy was he had more than a tank. He could hold off ISIS, I think.
I know. I remember there's some legal proceedings that went mm-hmm. around with that too.
Yeah.
As it went along. And
he was not a big pro government guy.
Right. That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah.
What other stories, you know, leap to mind? What is the strangest story? Because there are, you know, you've been on a lot of adventures, David, in many different ways. After all, you did go to the North Pole with Doug Hall, and I know that was a treat. But, you know, what story really sticks with you.
There's two, but I'll give you the one. Thanks for mentioning the North Pole. It's just the – I did a piece while I was up there in Resolute, which is 1,000 miles from the nearest tree and yet 1,000 miles from the pole. And we did a kind of a collection of recipes of blubber and seal meat. And have you ever had seal meat?
No, I haven't.
It's like a steak made of fish.
Okay.
But bad fish, because the way it's so cold there, they leave the seal outside their little Quonset hut, and then sometime in the morning, it might be the man or the woman of the house comes out with a hatchet and chops a piece off, and then uses one of these recipes. And I've got to get some of that meat and have you over for a barbecue.
Did I mention I'm a vegetarian these days?
Yeah,
I have to say, I was reading in The Kingdom of Ice by Hampton Sides, which had many descriptions of what eating seal, walrus, and other Arctic wildlife is like. And I was already having my stomach turned.
No, sorry. I'm sorry.
So what was we only have a couple of minutes left. What was the hardest story you ever pursued? You talk about Raymond Thundersky and how he ran away from you the first time you tried to say hello, and pretty much immediately after you said hello.
About six times that happened.
But, was there another story that you had to work hard to get?
I have this gift of getting people want to tell their stories. I mean, I'm not really answering your question, but I will tell you what I found in regard to that is that people are waiting most of their lives for someone to come up. I can't think of one time when someone said no, unless it was the mayor and he was beating his wife, and that's what the story was. But people really are just... Everyone, and it's such a cliche, but everyone does have a story, and it's not just a story, it's a great story. And the thing is pulling it out of them. I will tell you this. After leaving the Post, one of the prominent law firms in town here, Graydon Head, asked me to do, of each of their attorneys, stories. And after the end of the 90-minute interview, I created a system, 90 minutes, probably... Of the 90, of the 100, almost 100 of them, probably 15 of them wanted to go out and have drinks afterwards so they could continue to talk about their lives. Not in an egotistical way, but just because they so seldom get a chance to reflect on their own lives. And that's maybe the service I provided, I hope.
Well, you did a fine job and a great collection here in Square Pegs, too.
Thank you.
You said you only used a tenth of them. Do you think you'll go back and... hit round two?
Yeah, I think if people are interested, it's easy to do. Yeah, thank you. It's already done.
Indeed. Well, thank you, David, for being here today.
Yeah, it's great.
David Wecker, former Cincinnati Post columnist and now head creator at BrandFlick. His book, Square Pegs, Stories About Everything and Nothing, is available in bookstores and where books are sold. You'll find a link at wvxu.org. A man decides to go on a round-the-world trip on a bicycle and 2 years into his journey mysteriously disappears. The story of the lost cyclist, next on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.